Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So we're singing this song, one of our very favorite songs. We sing this every day in our Jagannath Puri Parikramas. This is a song when Narottam Das Thakur is teaching us how to cry out to the Lord. Goranga Kuruna Koro Dina Hina Jani. Coming before the Lord and saying, Ami Dina Hina Jani. I'm a very fallen and low person. I have nothing. Many times, as we were saying earlier today, when we come before Sadhu Guru, we try to impress him. Yes, Maharaj, I'm a very elevated person, very wealthy. You'll be very lucky if you get me as a disciple. But that's not the way to approach Chaitanya Mahaprabhu or his devotees. So Narottam Das Thakur was singing us that, teaching us that we should call out to the Lord in this mood, Mo Samo Patita Prabhu Nahi Tribhuvani. We should really consider that actually I'm the most fallen person in all the three worlds. Sometimes devotees ask us, how can you really think that? And you look out your window and you see many non-vegetarian people, people engaged in so many terrible activities, and they're not chanting. How can you really feel in your heart that you're more fallen than them? There may be many different answers to that, because this is not a matter of a siddhanta, but it's a matter of the heart. That may differ from different individuals. But one thing that we can think about is that I'm so very fallen. Although I've gotten such an opportunity by the mercy of my Guru Maharaj and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, still I'm such a rotten, nasty person. I have so many desires, and I'm dressing up like I'm a great personality. Thakur Bhaktivinoda, he sings in one song. Hari hai gari ta chai repeat some Krishna katha. We're just palanquin carriers. So he says, Garita Achare Rohilama Moji Na Korino Sadhu Sangha. This is really me. Garita Achare. I'm a nasty person. I'm addicted to all kinds of abominable things. And I know I have these pictures of myself with Gurudev. There. We have a big giant photo like this. We take of ourselves next to Guru Maharaj so we can show everybody, yes, that's me. But he says, actually, Nakorino Sadhu Sangha. Really, I never did Sadhu Sangha. Yes, I have the picture. Yes, I have the Kunti Mala. But I never really did Sadhu Sangha. What does it mean to do Sadhu Sangha? It means to come close to the heart of the sadhu. It means to follow his instructions. Not just stand next to him, like people go to Disney World and they have a life-size photo of Michael Jackson. Yeah. And you stand next to him and they take your picture. And then you go and tell your friends, see, I was with Michael Jackson. Huh? It has no meaning. Sadhu Sangha is much, much more than that. It's something of the heart. We may ask a question in this regard, that we're supposed to, many times, instructs that we should give up asatsanga tyag. We should give up bad association. But the question comes, then, how can I do that? if I have to work some job, I'm going to the office or something, and everyone there is at satsanga. Or even you may be in some society, and there may be many false devotees, nasty people, and you're having to associate with them. How do you do that? So Bhakti Vinod, in his commentary in Upadeshamrita, he says that sadhu sangha is not something that's done with the body, nor is asat sangha done with the body, but it's something done with the heart. And he says, especially for grihastha, they have to work with people. As he was saying, I think last night or this morning, when you're doing that, you have to be friendly with them. How is your wife? How are your kids? How is your vacation? You have to show some affection. But Bhaktivinoda says we don't reveal our heart to them. Even with devotees, we don't reveal our heart to just anyone. But some antaranga bhakta, some internal devotee that we feel something close with, that person we can do. It's not just some mechanical formula where you're instructed, this is your counselor, such and such person, and you have to reveal your heart to that person. People cry. You can't just do that. So Bhaktivinoda says that Nakurina sadhu sangha. I never really did sadhu sangha. He said, but just look at me. Loi sadhu vesh, ani upadesh. I'm sitting here in front of everyone, dressed like a sadhu, and giving instructions. Ani upadesh. He says, e bodo mayaravanga. This is Maya's big joke. But we should remember these words and dwell on them. This will help us in our bhajan. So Narottam Das Thakur, he says that Dante Trinidhori Gora Daki He Tomar. This is how we should call out Mahaprabhu's name with straw in our teeth. And we were speaking about this the other day. Many descriptions can be given what it means, a straw in my teeth. Because if you have straw in your teeth, you can't make any sound. It means I'm not arguing back. I'm not defending myself. It means that it's not from the lips, but it's from the heart. Dante Trinidhori Gora Daki He Tomar. People quote, Esho Amar, Hridaya Mandiri. He's praying, you please come and reside in my heart. This is what I want. Right? And then perhaps he has some trepidation, some anxiety, fear, that maybe the Lord's not going to do that. As we said the other day, if you go for a job interview and they ask you what is your qualification, and you tell them, well, actually I'm the most useless person there is, then they won't give you the job. So perhaps he's also fearing that. So then he threatens the Lord. Jaridoya nakuri be patita dekiya. Jari means if. Jaridoya, your mercy. Jaridoya nakuri. Maybe you want to give me your mercy when you see just how fallen I am. So if you do like that, then we have to change your name. Patita pavana nama kishiravagiya. Everyone says, Shri Pati Pavan Gurahari ki jai. But if you're not going to save me, how are you Pati Pavan? You're not Pati Pavan, we have to call you, we're singular, Shrestha Pavan, Uttam Pavan. You're not Pati Pavan. So then perhaps Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, okay. I'll give you my mercy. You just stand in the queue. And you look at the queue, it's going all the way from Babuji's house to Paris. It's a long queue. And Narottam Das Thakur, he says, I can't wait in the queue. I'm going to die. Pore cheva vatu fane nahika nistara. I'm drowning in the ocean. I'm so far out to sea, I can't see the shore. There's no hope for me. I'm going to die. I can't wait to die. Shri Charana Tarana Idane Dase Koro Paya. Please give me the boat of your lotus feet and pick me up from this ocean of suffering. So then Mahaprabhu perhaps says, okay. You can come on the boat, but do you have a ticket? If you have no ticket, how can you get on a boat? So Narottam Das Thakur says, I have a very good ticket. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Dance Ram Dasa. My ticket is my Gurudev. And my Param Gurudev, my Parat Param Gurudev. We're all servants of you. That's my ticket to get on this boat. I'm a servant, and a servant, and a servant of your servant. Partana Kuroya Sada Narotamo Dasa. He says that this is how we should be calling out to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I'm not trying to impress him that I'm a big person, I've done so much service, I have so much money, I'm so intelligent, I'm so educated, I'm so pure, I'm such a big Sankirtan devotee. Rather, we should come and present ourselves as the most rotten and fallen person that there is. This evening I thought we could speak a little something from a pastime in the 10th canto, chapter 64 of the Bhagavatam. This is a story of King Nriga, an interesting story. It's described that Krishna once took the members of the Adi dynasty to the place known as Prabhasketra. There's no mention of this, but we understand from our acharyas that every dham, every lila stali, has some particular shakti. It manifests to enhance the Lord's mood in a particular way, to enhance a particular pastime. When the Lord wants to enjoy his madhurjamoya lila, his very sweet pastimes, then Lord Balaram manifests himself as Brajbhumi Vrindavan, which is the perfect setting, the perfect background for those pastimes. It enhances them. We don't see those kind of pastimes in Paris or New York. Vrindavan is a place for that. When the Lord wants to enjoy his Maryada, Purushottam Lila, then Lord Balaram manifests himself as Ayodhya, and Bhagavan becomes Maryada Purushottam Ramachandra. And he manifests pastimes which are full of Veda Maryada, or perfect behavior. He's the ideal king, the ideal husband, the ideal father. He's ideal in every respect. And that place of Ayodhya perfectly enhances those pastimes. When the Lord wants to enjoy some Aishvarjamoya Lila, then Lord Balaram manifests himself as Vaikuntha, when he wants to enjoy some mixed pastimes of Aishvarja and Nara Lila, then Lord Balaram manifests himself as Dwarka. Every place has some particular purport. And we can understand the dham by studying the pastimes the Lord performs in that place. And we can understand the pastimes the Lord performs by studying the dham. The two interact with each other. So the fact that Krishna is taking the Yadu dynasty to Prabhasketra is significant, I find. What is the significance of Prabhasketra in Krishna Lila? Does anyone know? That's the place where Krishna manifested his disappearance lila, where he inspired the members of the Yadu dynasty to fight with each other. That's the place where he removed all those members of the Yadu dynasty. And he did that through the medium of the boys in his family disrespecting a Brahmin. So that's the nature of this dham. That's a very important pastime. You could say it's like a scar or a stain which is marked on that dham. It's always going to be there. So we know that this pastime, that Krishna went there with the members of the Adi dynasty, and the boys one day, they went out to play, like boys always do, and they went in the forest nearby. And when they were in the forest, they found a well. And they looked in the bottom of the well, and they saw a huge lizard. And so the boys, they lowered down some leather straps, and they caught a hold of that lizard, and they tried to pull him up, but somehow they couldn't pull him up. They lowered down some cloth ropes, and again they caught him in the ropes and tried to pull him up, but again it didn't work. And nothing they tried worked. So finally they went back and they told Krishna. And then Krishna accompanied them to see that giant lizard. And Krishna very easily extended his left hand and he pulled that lizard out of the well. And that lizard immediately manifested a very dazzling form with golden skin and very luxurious, opulent clothing, and garlands and ornaments of a devata. And Krishna, although he's sarvajna, he knows everything. He asked that devata, "Who are you? How did you take birth as a lizard? Why were you in this well? What happened?" And so, I think all of you know this story. We're going to tell it again just to refresh your memory. And then we'll go into a few points that you may not be so much aware of. So that lizard said, "In my previous life, I was a king. My name was Nriga. And perhaps you could count all the grains of sand and all the beaches of the world, or all the molecules in the universe, but you wouldn't be able to count all of my pious deeds. I did so many pious things," and he's not bragging. He's just being honest. "I fed the Brahmins. I found Brahmins who were poor and had families and young qualified Brahmins, and I gave them homes. I gave them wives if they didn't have wives. I gave them riches. I gave them cows. And I used to give away," he said, there's an interesting purport by Vishwanath in this section. He said, I gave away tens of millions of cows. You couldn't even count all of them." And in his purport, Vishwanath, he says something which I find a little significant in another different direction. Sometimes people have a hard time understanding descriptions in the Bhagavatam, how Maharaj Ugrasena had 10 trillion bodyguards or something, which is like 50 times more of the population of the whole planet. And how are you going to find enough toilets for all those people? And so many trillions of cows. And Vishwanath says in his purport, he says that some people say there was actually that many cows he gave away. And other people say that it was just expression, meaning I gave away a lot of cows. So it doesn't necessarily have to be taken in a literal way. It's not something we have to have a crisis of faith over. They have the number of bodyguards someone has, or the number of cows, or this or that. So he says that one day, some Brahmin's cow wandered away from his home and came into my herd of cows, and I didn't know it. And without knowing that, I unknowingly gave that cow away to a different Brahmin. And then later on, when the first Brahmin saw his cow in the home of the second Brahmin, he became very angry. He said, "Hey, that's my cow. You give it back to me." And the second Brahmin said, "No, Maharaj Nriga gave this to me. I'm not going to give his cow to my cow." And the two began quarreling. So then they came to see me to mediate things. And King Nriga said, "I didn't even know what was going on. I couldn't understand what had happened." But immediately, King Nriga was very fearful. "Oh, please forgive me. I did some mistake. I'll give both of you 100,000 cows. You please forgive me." But those two Brahmins were very angry. And they wouldn't forgive him. And they stormed off. And Maharaj Nriga told Krishna that shortly after that, I left my body. And I came before the court of Yamaraj. And Yamaraj said, "My dear king, you've done so many good deeds, I can't even calculate how long you're going to spend in the heavenly planets." He said, "You also have some impious acts as well. And which would you like to suffer first? You'd like to get the reaction first, the pious deeds or the impious deeds?" And Maharaj Nriga replied intelligently, "I'd rather take my impious deeds first." So he says, then immediately I fell down. And I took the body of this giant lizard, and I came here in this well, and I was suffering for so long. Someone may ask a question, that how is it that Maharaj Nriga got to see Krishna? Now, if you say that Maharaj Nriga, because of his punya, his pious activities, because of that, he was able to see Krishna, we'll feel very unhappy. Because it's not just by some fruit of activities that someone can have darshan of the Lord. Krishna says, "Bhaktyamam, avajanati, avanyascha, smitatvataha." I'm only known, I'm only seen by bhakti. I'm only understood by that. "Avajanati mam mudha, manusantani mashritam, persons are very foolish. They can't see me. And someone who's attached to karma conduct and punya activities. So Vishwanath, in one purport, he describes that one day, Maharaj Nriga, he was in his court, and a Vaishnav Brahman came to see him. And that Vaishnav Brahman, he begged some charity. My dear king, I have a very beautiful deity of Govinda, and I want to make a temple for him, but I don't have money. Could you please help me and make a temple? And Maharaj Nriga was very happy. He's a very pious person. He was thinking this is a very pious thing to do. He's not thinking that it was bhakti. He was thinking it was some punya. Yes, certainly I'll build you anything else you would like. I'll build you a temple. Well, I would like some shastras. If you could give me the Bhagavatam and the Gita and some other literatures like that, I would be very happy. So Maharaj Nriga, he did that thing. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that the devotee was so pleased with him that he blessed Maharaj Nriga. May you see the Lord. May you have darshan of the Lord. Thakur Bhaktivinoda, in Chaitanya Sikshamrita, a very interesting book. Sometimes it's a little hard to understand Chaitanya Sikshamrita, and especially Krishna Samhita of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Because he's so magnanimous. He's so kind. He's trying to reach out to so many different people. In Krishna, in Chaitanya Sikshamrita, he describes the benefits of performing pious activities. And he recommends that people dig wells so other persons can get water, and they dig lakes, they build nice roads, they plant trees by the road. If you go to Jagannath Puri, there's so many huge trees beside the road, which different kings and pious persons, they planted hundreds of years ago. Because many pilgrims are going to have darshan of Lord Jagannath. And this way they'll have some shade. So those kings who are building those things, they get some punya by doing that. Because many people, they benefit from the shade, they benefit from the road, they benefit from the free food distribution that he gives, they benefit from the lakes they can take bath in, the ponds that he digs. They benefit by drinking water from the wells. But that's not the purpose of that, those acts. Bhaktivinoda says the real purpose is you do all those things because some sooner or later maybe one Sudha Vaishnava may come. One Premi Bhakta may come. And if he sits under the tree and gets shade and you planted that tree, then you get Bhakti Unmukhi Sukriti. Not Karma Mukhi Sukriti or Jnana Mukhi Sukriti. But you get some Sukriti for Bhakti. So this is how Vishwanath says how Maharaj Nriga, he was able to have darshan of Krishna. Because of his benefit he'd gotten by this Agyata Sukriti. He was unknowing. He wasn't thinking it was an act of bhakti. But he was serving this Vaishnava of building this temple for Govinda and by giving him these bhakti shastras. So then that he told the whole story. And then Krishna told him, he said, now you go to Swargalok and you have a good time there. And later on you'll come to my abode. And then Krishna turned to those boys, those members of the Yadu dynasty, and he told them, you be careful when you're dealing with the Brahmins. In text 41 he says, Vipram krita gatsam api naiva druyat tamamakaha gnatum natum bahu sapantam va namaskurupta nityasaha. He said, my dear followers, and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in Sarita Darshan, he says the word mamaka, follower, is very important in this verse. My dear followers, never treat a learned Brahman harshly, even if he sinned, even if he attacks you physically or repeatedly curses you. You should always continue to offer him obeisances. I remember reading that and I was thinking, why is he saying this? What has this got to do with the story of King Nriga? And you contemplate on it a little more, you see. And Vishwanath in his commentary, we'll read this from his commentary. He says, mamaka, meaning, oh my followers. In other words, he says, Vishwanath says, I'm instructing anyone who wants to be my devotee. Not just you, but anyone who wants to be my devotee. You should behave like this. You should be forgiving. He says, otherwise, you should not think of yourself as my followers. You're not my devotee if you can't do this thing. So what is the meaning of it? Maharaj Nriga, there was no fault on his part. There was a very, very small mistake which was done unknowingly and was beyond his control practically. Some cow unknowingly came into his Goshala with the other cows, and he gave it away unknowingly to another Brahmin. It wasn't the fault. And then he offered to give 100,000 cows to each of those Brahmins. And those Brahmins, they were the ones at fault. They were the ones at fault because they were very angry with King Nriga, and they wouldn't forgive him. And because of their anger, because of his offense to the Brahmins, then he had to take birth as a lizard. So Krishna is telling his followers, don't ever treat a Brahmin harshly, even if they're a Brahma Bandhu, or someone who's not a proper Brahmin. Like these Brahmins who are giving way to anger, because the qualification, the nature of a Brahmin, as described in the ninth canto of the Bhagavatam, is that they have the quality of forgiveness. Jamadagni, he tells Parshuram, Vayam hi brahmanastata kshama yahantam vitaha yaya loka guru deva parameshcham agat padam. My dear son, he said, we're Brahmins, and we become worshipable for the people in general because of our quality of forgiveness. This is such a very important quality. It's because of this quality that Lord Brahma, the Supreme Guru, Yaya Loka Guru Deva, that he got this post of being Lord Brahma because of his quality of forgiveness. And he says, Shamaya Rochate Lakshmir Brahmi Shori Yata Prabha Shaminam Aso Bhagavan Tushite Hari Ishvara. The duty of a Brahman is to cultivate the quality of forgiveness, which is illuminating like the sun. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Hari, is pleased with those who are forgiving. So, in the realm of bhakti, this is a very, very important quality. And Krishna performs this pastime at Prabhas Ketra to teach us this. Thakura Bhakti Vinod in Krishna Sanhita and in Chaitanya Sikshamrita, he describes that Krishna's pastimes have both andaya and vyatirekabhyam, both a direct and an indirect meaning. They have some purpose also for us. Krishna's performing his leelas, his primary purpose is for his pleasure. But another purpose is to give us some instruction. He manifests his pastimes here in this world to help his devotees, to teach them how to behave. So that place of Prabhas Ketra is a place of lack of forgiveness. It's a place where the Yadu dynasty started quarreling amongst themselves over a very minor thing. They became drunk and over some, they had some harsh words. It's not even described exactly what they quarreled over. It must have been such an insignificant thing. And they started killing each other. Sometimes devotees, they ask us, what do you think about the jiva? Does the jiva fall from the spiritual world or not? And it's a very controversial thing for some people. And I made up a story in this regard, which is a little relevant to today also. I tell them that, well, we have this story. Once there were two little boys. One boy was 4 years old and the other boy was 5 years old. And one day the four-year-old went to his mother and he said, Mata, how did my brother and I get here? And the mother's looking at her little four-year-old boy and she's thinking, how am I going to tell him this thing? She said, one day a big bird brought you and your brother in a bag. And meanwhile, without him knowing it, the five-year-old boy went to the father and asked the same question. Father, how did my brother and I get here? The father thought the same thing the mother thought. He said, well, one day I was digging a hole in the backyard and I found you and your brother under a rock. That's how you came. And so, oh, that's very far out. So then later on, the two brothers, they come together and they start talking. And the one says, do you know, Mom told me this really far out thing, a big bird brought us. And the other brother said, that's really stupid. Dad told me this other thing, that we were found under a rock. You're nonsense. And the two of them started fighting. And finally, one of them picked up a rock and hit the other one on the head and killed him. So what does it mean? I think in France today, by the time they're about 10 or 12 years old, they'll understand all those things. But the only thing that has any meaning in it, there's been some terrible tragedy. And someone has unnecessarily died. So, like that, we quarrel amongst ourselves. And the only real benefit is, the only result is that we destroy each other. So, this pastime in Prabhas Ketra is teaching us this thing, that a Vaishnava must cultivate the quality of forgiveness. It's very, very important. Mm-hmm. In the Vasishtha Smriti, it's described, Agni do garadaschaiva, shastyapanir danapaha, chetra durapaha raicha, sad eti yatayayana. There are six different persons who are considered to be aggressors. Someone who lights fire to your house. Someone who poisons you. Someone who attacks you with weapons. Someone who's a thief. Someone who steals or occupies your property. And someone who steals your wife. Those are six different types of aggressors. And Manusmriti, chapter 8, text 350, says, Atatayinam ayantam hamyat eva vicharayam. Natayayi vadedo sho hantu bhavati kashchana. Without consideration, without hesitating, you should kill any of these type of aggressors. And he says there's no fault in killing them. So this verse reminds us of the Mahabharata, this first verse from Vasishtha Smriti, because the Pandavas, they went through all these things. Duryodhan gave them a big, nice house to live in. I'm sorry, I wasn't very good to you. Please forgive me. Here's a beautiful house. You can live in vacation house, which is made out of wax. And there were big vessels of gasoline and oil everywhere. And he lit that on fire to kill them. So, in that way, he was two kinds of aggressors. He was an arsonist, and he also was trying to kill him. He was a thief who had stolen their property. He tried to poison Bhima Sen once. He offered him some cake, which was full of poison. And Bhima fell unconscious in the river. They were stealing the property of the Pandavas, and they tried to steal Draupadi, their wife. So they did all six things. But Yudhisthira Maharaj was ready to forgive them on the spot. Even at the last minute in the battle of Kurukshetra, please, let's just forget about all this. I'll forgive you for all these things. Yudhisthira has the nature of a Vaishnava. He's very, very forgiving. The Shastra says these six persons are aggressors, and Manusmriti says these six aggressors can be killed without any hesitation. They should be killed. They've done a very sinful thing. But this is according to Arthashastra. Dharma Shastras give another instruction. Mahim syat sarva bhutani. Don't hurt any living entity. Mahim syat sarva bhutani. And Yajnavalkya Smriti describes, Atta shastra tu balavad dharma shastra miti stitihi. The rules of Dharma Shastra are stronger than those of Artha Shastra. We should understand, there are different shastras. Sometimes devotees, they want to write a commentary of Manusamhita, Manusmriti, or Vasishtha Smriti. But Prabhupada said, you can't touch these things. This is not meant for you. It's meant for a different age. According to these literatures, you're all Yavan Malachas. The only hope we have is Srimad Bhagavatam and the holy name. And that gives us the topmost hope. So, there are different literatures. There's Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha. And accordingly, there's also different literatures. There's Kama Shastra. We were saying something about this maybe in Paris the other day, somewhere. Vasayana Muni, he compiled Kama Sutra. And it's the most popular book in India. If you go to any bookstore, you'll see they have 20 different editions of Kama Sutra. The most popular ones are the illustrated ones. And people are buying those books like anything. But what people don't know is that Vasayana Muni was a brahmachari. And he says in the book, he says, actually the reason I'm writing this book is to get people to give up sex life so they can come to some higher point of view. But that literature is given to help people who have a certain consciousness, who are attracted very much by that. And many people today are attracted by that, but we don't know of any Gaudiya Vaishnava commentary on the Kama Sutra. Maybe someday someone will write one. It may be possible. It's a practical book, actually, which teaches people how to behave with the opposite sex. What is a good husband? What is a good wife? How to look out for her? How to behave with her? How to make her happy? But the purpose of it is to give that thing up. But higher than the Kama Shastras are the Artha Shastras. The Shastras which describe how to form a community. And if someone doesn't pay their debt, what kind of punishment they should get, according to how much the debt is, how you should take care of your family, how you should take care of your mother and your father, and how you should build a community, how the, what kind of army you should have, what kind of tax you should give to the citizens. That's Artha Shastra. Higher than the Artha Shastras are the Dharma Shastras. And the Dharma Shastras, they teach some Vanashram, the purpose of which is to worship Lord Vishnu. But higher than those are the Moksha Shastras. The Moksha Shastras are the Upanishads, or Vedanta Sutra. And they're describing liberation. But higher than all of those are the Bhakti Shastras. And if there's any discrepancy between any one of them, we take the higher shastra, and ultimately, Srimad Bhagavatam Pramanam Amulam. Srimad Bhagavatam is a spotless proof, the spotless evidence. We accept it above all other different literatures. So, although these Vedic literatures describe six different types of aggressors and say that such a person should be killed, there's a higher consideration. If we follow this consideration of karma, then think about it for a moment. Some may argue, what's the harm in killing cows? All these cows in their previous life were those people you see standing in line at McDonald's and eating hamburgers. Huh? I'm just helping them with their karma. It's not my fault. This is their karma. They have the karmic result of to be killed and suffer like this. So what's the harm in killing a cow? We won't kill the cows in India. But these other cows may be okay. Sometimes people, they twist things like this. We visited Kashmir in 1993, and I remember some of the local people there, they were telling us, Brahmins, they were saying, yes, yes, we shouldn't kill the cows, but it's okay to kill water buffaloes. They're not cows. And it's also okay to kill bulls, because when it says, Shastra says you shouldn't kill a cow, it means the female cow, not the male cow. So they're twisting things like this. So similarly, someone may say it's okay to kill the cows in the West because that's their karma. But there's a higher consideration. It may be their karma. But we have to act on the platform of forgiveness. We're not meant to be workers in Chitragupta's organization, we were saying the other day, in the court of Yamaraj. We want to work in the court of Adosha Darshi Nittai, where he's the high judge and he doesn't see any fault. We have to develop compassion. That compassion is a higher principle. Chanakya Pandit says, Shanti tulayam tapo nasti. Na santo cha param sukham. Na trishnaya paro vyadir. Na chudharmo dayapara. There's no greater austerity than being peaceful. There's no joy greater than self-satisfaction. There's no disease worse than greed. And there's no dharma, natcha dharma dayapara, no dharma greater than compassion. And Chanakya again he says, kokilanam sharo rupam srinam rupam pativratam vidya rupam kurupanam kshama rupam tapashvinam. The beauty of a cuckoo bird is in its voice. The beauty of a wife is in her chastity to her husband. That's the beauty of a wife. The beauty of an ugly person is learning. He may be very ugly, but if he's a very learned person, then that's his beauty. And he says that for sadhus, forgiveness is the beauty of sadhus. In the Vishnu Purana, there's a long, complicated story, which we won't go in the direction to tell you now. but how Vishvamitra Muni killed the 100 sons of Vasishtha. And Vasishtha, he had the power to very easily destroy Vishvamitra and all of his family, but it never even occurred to him. But Vasishtha was very, very depressed because all of his sons had been killed, and now there was no more dynasty to go on. So he decided that he would commit suicide. And so he climbed the top of a big mountain and he jumped off head first, and there were rocks down below. And when he struck the ground down below, it became as soft as cotton. And he couldn't die because he's such a great rishi. He had so much power. So then he took some heavy stones and tied them around his neck and jumped into the ocean. But the ocean waves carried him back to the land. So then he went to a place where there were so many crocodiles. And he tied his, in a river, he tied his arms up and things, and he jumped into the river. And the river untied his ropes and swept him to one bank safely. And then he realized, he said, anyway, I can't kill myself. But he was feeling very, very depressed and very, very disturbed. And he was contemplating again how he could commit suicide, and suddenly he heard a sound. Om Sahasra Sirsa Purushaha Sahasraksa Sahasrapat Sabhumindisvato Vritta Asyatistada Sangulam. He heard some Vedic mantras, not chanted like I'm doing, but chanted very, very nicely. And he looked around, where is that sound coming from? And he saw some young lady there who was pregnant. And he said, my dear woman, who are you? And where is that sound coming from? And she told him that, I'm the wife of your eldest son, Shakti, who was killed. And I'm pregnant with your son's child. And for 11 years, your grandson has been in my womb. And the whole time he's been chanting his Vedic mantras. Very interesting pregnancy. So then Vasishtha Muni became very happy. And that boy, when he was born, his name was Palashya. And he wanted to kill Vishvamitra Muni and all of his sons for killing his father and killing his uncles. But Vasishtha told him, no, you should forgive him. It's a higher principle. You should forgive them. And Parashara Muni agreed to that. And he forgave them on the order of his grandfather. Someone was asking us the other day in Mayapur how we can forgive someone. We can do it with our lips, but it may not be from our heart. So we can understand that this Palashya Muni, perhaps in his heart, he still bore some hurt. But he agreed to give up the campaign to fight against Vishvamitra Muni and his sons. He agreed, at least in theory, to forgive them and try. And because of that, Vasishtha Muni became so pleased with him, he blessed him, that you'll become the author of a great Purana. And so Palashya Muni became the author of the Vishnu Purana, one of the greatest Puranas, because of this blessing of Vasishtha Muni, because he was able to forgive. So this forgiveness is a very, very important principle in bhakti. If we don't forgive, and we're going to keep poison inside of our heart, and we'll be troubled. There's a story that we heard once that one man was living in a village, and he, later in his life he decided that he would give up his material activities and become a sadhu. And he started chanting Hare Krishna, and eventually he moved out of the village into the forest. And he built a small kutir, and he was sitting there chanting Hare Krishna. So in that village, there was one other person who was very, very envious of him. They were always enemies. And he heard that his old enemy became a sadhu. So he went to see him, and he started teasing him. Oh, big man now, Maharaj, now you're a sadhu, bogus person. And he started calling him all kind of names. But that person who had become a devotee, he thought, anyway, I deserve this. And he didn't react. He just chanted continued chanting his japa. And finally that man became very angry. He spit on his face. And still, that devotee didn't do anything. He didn't respond. Every day, that fellow started coming and calling him all foul names and pushing him, doing all. One day he passed urine on him. And then finally he said, look, are you a man? Are you a woman? What's your problem? I'm coming every day. I'm insulting you in so many ways. And you don't have anything to say? You know, what kind of man are you? And then finally, that devotee who'd really become a sadhu, he spoke up. And he asked him a question. He said, if someone brings you a gift and you don't accept it, what happens to the gift? And that envious fellow said, well, you keep it. Yeah. He says, I'm not accepting your anger and your frustration, your hatred. So you can keep that thing. We were reading some verses, I think this morning, one verse, Udyoga Parva Mahabharata. Akrosh Aparivada Bhyam Vihimsata Buddha Bhudan Vakta Papampada Take Shanmana Vimuchate. An ignorant person may try to hurt someone else by criticizing them. But if the person forgives them, if they have this quality of forgiveness, then what happens is that all of their impious acts, whatever pop, whatever sin they have, goes to the critic. And they become purified of that by forgiveness. Later on in the same section of the Mahabharata, it said, Akushamana nakroshan manyor eva vitikshataha akushtaram nidahati sukritam chashavindati. A person who's criticizing shouldn't be criticized back. Because the pain that you feel when someone criticizes you, if you forgive that person, then the pain that you're feeling, that slowly and surely, little by little, takes away all the punya, all the good credits that person has, and they come to you. All of your pop and all of your impious acts go to him, and all of his good deeds come to you. So really, critics are our best friend. And the behavior of forgiveness, the act of forgiveness, is a very important principle in bhakti. If we can't forgive someone, then how can we advance? And Krishna gives us so many different opportunities to act upon this. People come and they insult us. They act in very bad ways. When Maharaj Parikshit found Dharma, the bull, who's standing only on one leg, he asked him, who did this to you? Oh, kill that person immediately. And Dharma, the bull, he could have said, yep, it was him right there. He's the guy. He said, well, actually, it's really hard to say who did it. Some people say it's some act of fate. Other people say that it's my own karma. I can't really blame anybody but myself. It's really my own fault. And then Maharaj Pariksit can understand, well, this is not an ordinary bull. This is the bull of Dharma. So we should behave like that if we're very serious about developing bhakti. It's described in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam. Parasubhava karmani cha na prasamsin nagarayat. This from ekam ekam pasyam prakritya purishena cha. Krishna said one should neither praise nor criticize the activities or nature of other persons. Rather, you should see this world as simply the combination of material nature and enjoying souls. It's not that one person is good, one person is bad. Everyone ultimately is good. Right? And our acharyas, they describe that of these two principles of neither praising nor criticizing, it's okay to praise. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, we just posted this on our Facebook page a few days ago, he wrote in one letter that praising others, glorifying others, is something very helpful for our bhakti. We should always try to find some good quality in other persons. Yudhisthira Maharaj in the Shanti Parva of the Mahabharata, he has a conversation with Bhishma. And Yudhisthira asked Bhishma Dev, Vidvan Murka Pragaldena Midhis Tikshena Bharata akushyamana na sadasi kuttam kuryat arindama. What should a learned person who's gentle by nature, what should he do if he's publicly insulted by the harsh words of an arrogant fool? And Bhishma Dev replied, Shriyatam Pitivi Pala Yataiso Ritto Nugiyate Sada Sucheta Sahate Nareshya Achetasa. He said, listen, King, to how this topic is described. In this world, a wise person should always be tolerant of an ignorant person. Alushyan Kushyamanasya Sukritam Namavindati Duskritam Chapmano Marshi Rushyat Yeva. One who can remain tolerant and doesn't become angry, he gets all the abusers' pious credits. They all come to him. And his sins are transferred to that angry person. This is our principle. So this thing will come to us. We'll always, it's a guaranteed thing. We're going to meet someone in this world who's going to abuse us, someone who's going to act in a bad way. So Krishna, he tells his followers there at Prabhas Ketra, don't ever treat a Brahmin harshly, even if he's harsh to you, even if he attacks you physically, even if he's sinned, he's done many terrible things, you should forgive him. It's a higher principle. Sometimes we talk about all the fall-down gurus in ISKCON. Why should we speak like that? If you're speaking like that, you're making some distinction between them and you. You're speaking like you're better than them. They come from the same society. We're all Westerners coming to this path of bhakti. We're no better than anyone else. And it's not that this is the only time this has ever happened. There's a little secret. Not a deep secret. Not a carefully kept secret. But a little secret in the Gaudiya mission, Gaudiya mat. The time of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, when the sannyasis would have some problem, they would have some fall down or something, they had a farm. They would send them to the farm. And they would retire them for some time. And they would stay in that place and purify themselves, become more serious in their non-bhajan and read and purify their consciousness. And then again they would go out and they wouldn't tell anyone about the thing that they had done. Now in our culture today, we think, my God, how can you not tell them? You have to tell everybody about that thing. But that's not right. We shouldn't tell people. We shouldn't speak about someone else's problem. If we dare to speak about that, that problem may come to us. My Guru Maharaj, he spoke something about this topic. He said that to correct and criticize someone is the business of only such a person who's acting as guru. To correct and criticize someone is the business of guru. He has a right to inflict punishment on you, to catch hold of your ear and slap you, Guru Karnadhara. He'll correct you and criticize you, rascal, why are you doing this and that? He said, you have no right to chastise, no right to correct anyone. You are not Guru. Guru has that right. If you see something and you have a good heart, oh, you think he's doing something wrong, something detrimental to his bhakti, then go to him. Offer obeisances and tell him confidentially, not in front of others. Tell him, oh my brother, I see this thing and it pains me very much that you're doing this. This is a great impediment on the path of devotion. I fear you won't be able to make any advancement. Therefore, I'm coming to you and telling you, my dear friend, please don't do this. Please be serious about your bhajan. Tell him in such a humble way. Speak to him confidentially, not in the presence of others. If he's serious, he'll admit, you're my dear friend. I'm blind to my own faults. You pointed them out, so I'll be careful. He'll accept it. But if you speak in the presence of others, the reverse effect will be there. And today, we're speaking in the presence of the internet. People write things. They write terrible things. They're not even sure about somebody. They hear some rumor. And they write some terrible thing about some other Vaishnava in front of the whole world. The devotee asked him, sometimes I may want to correct someone, but I can see that the person won't accept what I have to say. Gorgavinda Maharaj. So why shall you tell him? You should think he won't accept it. So why shall I tell him? let him go. As you sow, so shall you reap. What can I say to such a person? This is the behavior of a sadhu. And this will be good for us. But we do the exact opposite. Because rather than placing stress on bhakti, rather than placing stress on nam, rather than placing stress on Krishna katha and sadhu sangha and associating properly with devotees through Krishna nam and through Krishna katha, we place emphasis on management. We place emphasis on chastisement of other people. Because rather than being anusar, rather than following taking the essence from our Gurudev, we're doing anukor. We're trying to imitate him. He chastised like this, he didn't compromise, so I'll also do like that. And I'll go and I'll tell that rascal this thing and this thing. But you don't know. That person has a right to chastise, has an obligation to chastise, who has the position of guru or teacher. You may be a parent. Your parents have the right to chastise you. I'm sorry. They have that right. They have that obligation out of love for you. And if you feel they love you and they're telling you that, then you can accept it, isn't it? But if someone, we feel they don't love us, they just want to control us, and they try to come and tell us something, we're not interested in hearing that. We should understand this principle. If we try to appoint ourselves as a reformer of others and go around trying to correct everyone, we may make some offense. Because this is against the principle of Shastra. Ashadadami Vimukhe Pashinviti Yashchopa Desha Chivanama Aparada. Padmapurana says it's an offense to Nam, the ninth offense of the holy name, to preach to someone who doesn't have faith in you. And if you do something against Shastra like that, then what's the result? Shruti Shmriti Puranadi Pancharatri Vidimvina Kantike Hare Bhakti Utpataya Kalpate. You'll create a disturbance. A disturbance in society, in the Vaishnava society. People will be disturbed. Why is he acting like this? Who does he think he is? The devotees will become disturbed. And you'll become disturbed in terms of your bhakti. You won't be peaceful. You won't be able to fix your mind in the holy name. You'll become proud. You'll start thinking, yes, I'm a big person. I'm qualified to chastise and instruct everyone else. So we should cultivate the quality of forgiveness. Rupa Goswami in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, in the second wave, first chapter, text 111, he describes the 25th quality of Krishna. That 25th quality is Kshama Shila. Krishna is very tolerant or forgiving. Rupa Goswami writes, Kshama Shila Paradhanam Sahanam Parikirtite. A person who endures the offenses of others is called tolerant. That's Krishna. We have a very hard time tolerating something. If someone says the slightest bad thing about us, we become very, very angry. But Krishna is tolerating so many terrible things. People are killing other people. They're killing animals. They're doing so many terrible things. And Krishna is forgiving that. Krishna is so kind. He's so forgiving. The example given by Acharyas is Sishupal. Pati vacham adatta keshavaha sapam anaya cha vedi bhubhute anu hum kurite ganadvani nahi gamayu utani keshari. Although Krishna Shupal criticized Krishna hundreds of times, Krishna didn't give any response. He just tolerated it. The verse says, although a lion replies to the thunder, if there's some thunder in the sky, then the lion roars back. But the lion doesn't pay any attention to the howl of a jackal or a dog. It ignores that. So Krishna, he tolerated, he ignored the jackal-like calls of Sishupa. Krishna has that quality of forgiveness. And this quality of forgiveness is very, very important. Thakur Bhaktivinoda, he describes, Vaishnava pamane bhayataka uchita. That we should be afraid of insulting other Vaishnavas. And he quotes Chaitanya Charitamrita. Mahantera apamana de de se jahoi Echanara dosen Kamadita se jahoi Kamadita se jahoi. should be afraid of doing Vaishnava Parad. I know one friend of ours from Singapore, and he says that actually it's very hard to do Vaishnava Parad. Very difficult. First of all, you have to find someone who's really a Vaishnava. Mm-hmm. And there's practically no Vaishnavas, so... We should be very, very careful. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu doesn't speak like that. Mm-hmm. Mahaprabhu teaches the devotees that we should see everyone as a devotee. And he says that Ananta Brahmande Jata Sabha Moradas Eteke Jepara Himse Se Jayanas. Ananta Brahmande Jate Sabha Moradas. Everyone and all the unlimited universes is my das, my servant. And anyone who criticizes anyone else, they'll be destroyed. We should treat everyone with respect. And in particular, we should be very, very afraid of Vaishnava Aparad. So Mahantara Apamana Jay Desha Gramahoy, because if an advanced devotee is insulted for that person's fault, an entire town or place is afflicted. We've seen this. If some person makes some Vaishnava Aparad to an elevated Vaishnava, then the whole place becomes coated with some sin. And we should, that place, the devotees should do kirtan. They should have some serious harikatha. You should beg forgiveness from the Vaishnavas in that place. You should worship the Vaishnavas to overcome that fault in that place. Because the principle is described in the 74th chapter, text 40 of the Bhagavatam, 10th canto. Is nindam bhagavata shunvam tatparasya janashiva tatona paitiyaso pi yatyada supitachchuta. Anyone who fails to immediately leave a place where he hears criticism of the Lord or his faithful devotee, it doesn't say his elevated devotee, but it says tatparasya, someone who's dedicated to the Lord. So many people are dedicated to the Lord. They may be dedicated a little, they may be dedicated a lot. But tatparasya, they're dedicated to doing some service. And if we hear some criticism of that and we don't leave that assembly, then you'll fall down, bereft of your whatever pious credit you have. Now the question comes at this point, I have to say. Sometimes people, they point out the very sad fact that in some Vaishnava sanghas, there's been severe criticism of other senior Vaishnavas. And some people, based on it, they say that therefore the whole sangha is bad. But I don't agree with that. That doesn't make sense with me. If you say that, then maybe you'll also say the whole city is bad, the whole country, France is bad, you should leave France. If someone's done some Vaishnava Aparad here, the whole planet is bad. You should leave your body and leave the planet. Where do you draw the line? How do we understand that? We understand Sangha by... Sangha means when we're agreeing with someone, and we're giving our heart to those persons. So leaving that Sangha, it may be even our Gurudev Sangha. If someone is doing some bad thing, we don't leave our Gurudev Sangha. He may be disappointed and unhappy with us if we do that, but we have to leave that particular Sangha, which is not our Gurudev Sangha. Just like if you go to the Ganga, and you hear the Ganga is very pure, so I'll drink some Ganga jal, and you reach in, and you pull out some stool. We were saying it the other day. So, Ganga is always pure, I'll take that, it's okay. You'll become sick, you'll die. It may be coming from the Ganga, but it's not from the Ganga. This is not my Gurudev Sangha. I remember after Guru Maharaj left, I was in Malaysia for some time, and I came back to Bhubaneswar, and my God, there was a big fight going on like anything. And I came there, and I saw there's no Bhagavatam class. There was no Bhagavatam class. And I said, what's going on? The Buddha, there's no time for class. We're having all this fighting going on. There's big wars going on. This person criticized me this and this. Why? We have to do these battles. There's no time for Bhagavatam class. We told him every day, our Guru Maharaj is reciting his verse, Shoka Moha Bhayapa. Yasyam Vaisya Yamanayam Krishna Padamapurishe Bhakti Upadise Bhumsa Shoka Moha Bhayapa. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says this verse describes a gona benefit of bhakti and a mukhya benefit. The mukhya benefit is you get Krishna prema. Mukhya benefit of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. The primary benefit is that you get Krishna prema. And the secondary benefit, insignificant, tuchafal, is that Shoka Moha Vayapaha. Fear, lamentation, and illusion will go away. So we have to do these things. And that's really the Sangha of our Gurudev. Not just the building, not just the t-shirts with his name on it, or his deity, or this or that, but his instructions. I remember a nice story I heard about one sadhu in Vrindavan. Some devotees were going to see him every day. And he's a very exalted sadhu. And someone decided they wanted to get his shoes. So they looked at the shoes that he had, and the size, and the style and everything, and they went to the shop, and they found the exact same kind of shoes. So they purchased the new shoes, exact same size, exact same brand, style, color, everything exactly the same, and they replaced them. And then that sadhu, when he came out that morning, he put his feet in the shoes. Hey, what is this? And immediately he could understand someone was doing some trick, and he actually understood who had done it. And he turned to him and said, "Ah, you are very tricky. You're doing this." He was making some jokes. And then he became serious. And he said, "Actually, I was never interested in collecting these kind of things from my guru. I was more interested in collecting his bhav." That's a sadhu. We should be interested. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in his commentary on the third canto of the Bhagavatam, he says the function of the sishya is to be anubhav of the guru, to follow the mood of the guru. It's not that we have to collect a whole bunch of paraphernalia. This is from my guru, his copan, this is his dhoti, this is his plate, this is that, and we have a museum of things. We should have a museum in our heart. What's the value of collecting all of those things if we don't imbibe his instructions? Our Fakir Mahamrabhu once he said, he was speaking about Gandhi, and I don't know, maybe some of you are not so familiar with Gandhi. Gandhi's such a famous person. They consider him Mahatma. They consider him to be a sadhu. The Vaishnavas are not so impressed by him, but common people, they call him Mahatma. Gandhi, his eldest son, was a debauchee. He became a Muslim. He became a drunkard. And he was a womanizer. And he died from venereal disease. So, Fakir Mahamrabhu was telling us, what's the point of being the son of a great man if you're useless? So two things come from the father, mutra and putra, urine and a son. They both come from the same organ. But are we a proper son, or are we like urine? We should follow the instructions and the mood of our Gurudev, and not just be dharmadvajis waving a flag, but not respecting everyone. We were reciting that verse earlier today from the Chaitanya Bhagavat. Ese Vaishnava Dharma Sakale Pranati. Dharma Dvaji Iti Nahirati. That the Dharma of a Vaishnava is to offer respect to everyone. But those persons who are Dharma Dvajis, say Dharmadvaji Jar, Iti Nahirati. They have no taste for that. They don't have any taste for offering respect to everyone. They think more in terms of Kanishas. They think more in terms of the deity and the worship they're doing and the external projects they have, or advertising themselves as followers of their Gurudev. So we have to develop some soft hearts. We have to be willing to forgive. If we can't forgive persons, then who's going to forgive us? If we demand perfection in everyone, if we demand no one can come to this program except for someone who's perfect, then who's going to be here? Who's going to give the class? What's going to happen with our society? We won't have anyone. We have to see that these are the people who come to Mahaprabhu's movement. And they may not be perfect. Lord Ramachandra, he had his monkey army. Prabhupada one time he said, "I have my monkey disciples." But that's what he had. And we should respect that. They're persons who came to him. We have to be forgiving if we see any bad quality in them. If we can't be forgiving of other people, then how will we get forgiveness ourselves? It's described in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Vasta Swabhava Adhya Bhukta Dhamma Pore Nitoya Pore Hare Krishna Hare Krishna Krishna Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram Vasta Swabhava Adhya Dosha Kshama Kore. The nature the svabhav of a devotee is that doshak samakori, he doesn't see any offense in other people. He doesn't see any faults in other people. Dina doya kore, e sadhu svabhava hoy. All saintly persons are very kind of poor and fallen. Their quality is they excuse any offense. They forgive. This is the nature of a devotee. If we want to cultivate bhakti, we have to cultivate this quality of being forgiving. Oh, he offended my Gurudev. I heard some rumors. I don't know, I wasn't always there, but I heard some people offended my Guru Maharaj. But then years later, some of those same people came to me. One of them came to me, he was crying. Big sannyasi came, he was crying. He said, Madhavananda, I offended your Guru Maharaj. Please forgive me. What can I say? But he came in such a sweet way. I don't know. My grandma said some things about him to me. But how can I have any anger toward him when he's coming to me like that? Other people, they've done a similar way. They've come and spoken very highly of our Gurmaj. One person, he was supposed to have done some offenses, I don't know, to our Gurmaj. But later on, he came and purchased 100 books of our Gurmaj and took and sold them to everyone. Publicly, he said very good things. How am I supposed to feel about a person like that? On the other hand, I've met people who are supposed to be my friend, and they started criticizing me, my Guru Maharaj, in my face. This happened once in Vrindavan. There was a senior person who was saying this, and I'm really sorry, I have to go. And I just ran away from that person. I don't want to see their face. So we're individuals, we're persons. And what happens between our Gurudev and other persons, that's not our lookout. But at the same time, I have a responsibility. If I see someone criticizing my Gurudev, criticizing the Vaishnavas, I can't tolerate it. If I hear some rumor, it's natural. Maybe I'll want to keep away from that person. But still, I should be forgiving. Because I've also committed offenses. Recently, there was one senior sannyasi who had some problems, and he left sannyas. And everyone was criticizing like anything. And I wrote something on the internet about him. And I said, he did so many good things. And I really appreciate it. I said, I take the dust at his feet. And I always appreciate the very wonderful things that he did. And when I wrote like that, my God, so many people became very angry with me. How can you say that? He's an offended or our Gurudev. He's a this, he's a that. But my business is not to work for Chitragupta and find fault. My business is to work for Lord Nityananda. We should be forgiving of him. Otherwise, how will we be forgiving ourselves? Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he told Keshava Keshavani, Kashmiri, oh my dear Brahman, this is the duty of a Brahman. You should give up all your pride and serve Krishna by showing mercy to everyone, by being forgiving to everyone. This is the nature of a Vaishnava. And if we can't cultivate this quality, how will we get bhakti? So to teach us this, Krishna, he enacted this pastime with the members of the Yadu dynasty and that Prabhas Ketra, to teach us how important it is to be forgiving. We should forgive other people. We should forgive, especially if we see some senior devotee. And we also have to forgive ourselves. Sometimes we make some mistake, we do some stupid thing, and then we see devotees also just beating themselves on the head and becoming very, very depressed. We should feel fallen. We should feel very, very low. But at the same time, we should have hope. We should be enthusiastic. Utsaha nishchaya dharya. We should have confidence that everything is going to be okay. Rupa Goswami in Padyabali, he says that something to the effect that when I hear that the Lord is merciful to everyone, then I get some hope. And when I hear that he's very kind to the devotees, then I become very nervous. Because I'm not a devotee, he's thinking like that. But we should understand Krishna has this quality of forgiveness. And the nature of a devotee is he's Krishna Kripa Srimurti. He's the embodiment of Krishna's mercy. If we want to be devotees, we should be merciful. That's the function of the devotee. The devotee is more merciful than Krishna. We remember maybe in, I don't know, it must have been 1994, Bhubaneswar. I was waiting to go and see our Guru Maharaj. And we were sitting outside of his hut, and suddenly his servant came running out. He was very excited. He said, Madhav, I'm going to come right now. Guru Maharaj wants to see you. Yes? And so I went inside the room, and Guru Maharaj was shouting. And there was a devotee, one of my god brothers, he was screaming and crying and holding on to our Guru Maharaj's feet. Our Guru Maharaj was kicking him. And Guru Maharaj was shouting at me, get him out! Get him out! I've never experienced such a heavy thing in my life. Myself and one of the devotees, we had to pry him away and carry him. He was weeping and crying. You remember this? He couldn't even speak. What he had done wrong. And I remember the other devotee who was with me, also my god brother, started immediately chastising him. He didn't even know what he'd done. Ah, you nonsense, you did it. And I thought, my God. I thought, I don't know what he's done, but it could have happened to me maybe also. I'm not so perfect. And then we come to find out that later on what happened, that devotee, he'd previously been initiated by one sannyasi who had problems having illicit sex with young boys and with men. And he went into our Guru Maharaj and asked him, how do I know the same thing that happened with my previous guru is not going to happen to you? It was a very big offense. And to teach that devotee, out of love for him, and to teach all of us a big lesson, it was a big lesson, a big drama, he said, get out, I'll reject you. This is a big offense. And then he called for all the disciples in Bhubaneswar. Everyone came to that place. And one senior devotee came and told us what had happened. And he said, so Guru Maharaj wants to know, should you forgive him or not? And I remember everyone was like dead quiet. And then one god brother from America, he stood up very angry. No, he's a nonsense rascal and we shouldn't forgive him. And then everyone was again quiet. And then maybe other person spoke, but I remember at one point I stood up and I said, I think we should forgive him. Because are we so much better than him that what happened to him can't happen to us? And so then somehow he was forgiven and he became close again to our Guru Maharaj. And we don't want to remember that thing in connection with him because the final thing was he was forgiven. And perhaps that lesson was really a lesson for all of us. I felt that way that day. I felt very purified. I felt terrified. My God, I'm going to be very, very careful now how I deal with my Guru Maharaj. But I suggest we should always remember who we are and not think ourselves so big and so important. We're not guru to chastise, to judge someone else. We should always remember our fallen position. I have no qualification to chastise someone. I have to be forgiving. And if I'm forgiving, and perhaps I can also be forgiven myself. We'll stop there. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Veda Bhaktavinda ki jai, Hamsa Kalpataruvishcha, Vanda Vedusha, Paditanam Bhavanevyo, Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha. Is he okay?
I don't know what happened, yeah. Did you mind?
Oh, but you're very brave.
I'm
not crying, very strong.
Is that not good? He agrees with you.
So then, do you want to add anything for Lou? To Tikshi for Lou? Any questions or other comments from anyone? Krishna comments? Add anything?
But he's the leader of the
most fun.
So he's not
Kapatya Pavan.
So how can he be the leader?
Well, those Kapatya persons, they're offenders to the Vaishnavas. They're Dharmadvajis. Because they're dressing like devotees, but they're not really respecting devotees. And one such personality was the devotee who later became known as Devaki Nandan Das. And he committed a great offense to Srivas Thakur. And he went to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and asked for forgiveness. Mahaprabhu wouldn't see his face. He said, you have to get forgiveness from Srivas. And Srivas very quickly forgave him.
But still, that offense was counting against him. And then later, he served the Keshwar Pandit. The Keshwar Pandit was dancing in kirtan. He fell unconscious in ecstasy. And so many thousands of people were gathered there to see this ecstatic Vaishnava. They were pressing forward to take the dust from his feet, and that devotee stopped them. And he got the mercy of the Keshwar Pandit. And then later, he was initiated by another Vaishnava. I can't remember his name. Someone in the line of Lord Nityananda, his name's not coming to my mind. And he told him what he'd done. And his Guru Maharaj told him that you should write this Vaishnava Vandana. And we sing that prayer, Vaishnava Sarnam. Vrindavana Basi Jitta Vaishnava Eragam Katane Vandana Kori Sabara Charam, which is said to be both a preventative and an antidote to Vaishnava Aparad. So there's some hope for them from the Vaishnavas, because the Vaishnavas are even more merciful than the Lord, and they may be kapatya. And that's why it's so important for us to serve all the Vaishnavas, big and small, and to be respectful to all the divinities, because we don't know who's who and what's what. We can't see who's a great devotee and who's not. We should simply respect everyone. Is that okay? Rupa Goswami describes two different dwarkas. It's maybe the answer to your question. One of which is actually not dwarka. It's actually Vrindavan. And in that place, Swayam Rupa Govinda, Nandanandan Krishna, he's there in Navar Vrindavan Garden. And perhaps it's that Krishna who sends Uddhava to Vrindavan. In a similar way, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says a very interesting thing that when he's commenting on how Nanda Maharaj returned from Mathura without Krishna, he says that actually Krishna returned. Krishna manifested two different forms, one form of Mathura and another form which returned with his father. And he manifested two Nanda Maharajas and two sets of cowherd boys and two sets of carts and everything. And he says there are two compartments in Vrindavan. One compartment, the compartment of Milan, the union, and another compartment is the compartment of Vipralamba, or separation. And he said Krishna's always there in Vrindavan. And he gives some interesting examples to support this. When Uddhava arrived in Vrindavan, at first he saw everyone was so joyous, and the deer and the cows were so happy. And Vishnu comments that this, he'd entered into the Milan compartment of Vrindavan, where Krishna was at. And then later he left that compartment and entered into the Vipralamba compartment of separation. He saw that everyone was simply crying in separation from Krishna. So both those compartments are there at the same time in Braj. And similarly, there's different chambers in Dwarka. Dwarka is not just a place, but it's a sentiment. It's a feeling. And within that Dwarka, there's another chamber of another Vrindavan, which our Goswamis have described. So I haven't heard an exact answer to your question, but perhaps it's something like that. That's the best that I can say. Anyone else have a comment on that? Very nice question, thank you. We should think about that.
Actually, not my question, my friend's question, she's not here today. She doesn't see me. I told her, I asked her.
But I think what I'm saying is correct by Shastra, and it's at least one answer, one possible answer, and there may be other answers as well. Yes, anybody?
Forgiveness. it's something that I have I meditate on a lot. I have given a lot of thought to it. I'm not. And I feel that every situation is unique. I feel that what you have expressed is appropriate and correct, but is perhaps not always applicable in every situation. If I look at Islam history, there are countless instances where forgiveness has been used, in my opinion, in my own subjective observation, in the name of forgiveness, forgiveness has been used to avoid social responsibility, and in the name of forgiveness, further aparad has been committed to other Vaishnavas. So, I feel that if I am a member of a society, I have a social responsibility, even though I'm not Yamaraj's
assistant
envoy. I feel that I have a social responsibility to, if I see a Vaishnava or somebody who's trying to be a Vaishnava, whatever his status is, committing Vaishnava fraud, even if that person is senior to me, I feel that if I don't say anything, and because of my silence, this person continues to commit aparad to other Vaishnavas, I don't feel that is appropriate either. It's almost like a situation where I have to choose, okay, do I want to make Vaishnava aparad to this senior devotee who is committing Vaishnava aparad to some other devotees, or do I want to make the Vaishnava aparad of being silent and not having made an effort to prevent further aparad to other Vaishnavas? It's a dilemma, and oftentimes I have thought, well, you know, if I go to hell I'd rather go to hell because I tried to prevent further Vaishnava parad than because I remained silent, and maybe I will. I don't know. I feel that it's not so cut and dry.
Thank you. In the assembly with Sishupal, when Sishupal began to blaspheme Krishna, the Brahmins couldn't tolerate it, and they spoke up, and as did Bhimasena and Yudhishthira and others, and they wanted to go and kill Sishupal. And the Brahmins, seeing that they didn't have the strength to do anything against them, they just left that assembly. So we have a responsibility, according to our position, to say something. And that's the duty. If anyone in our line, everyone should preach, everyone should speak Krishna Katha. In Hari Bhakti Vilas, we just printed in our last Krishna Katha Mita Bindu magazine, issue 280, a verse which says that we should have someone who's the speaker of Krishna Katha should be someone who's very learned in the Shastra and well behaved. And then it goes on to say, but if there's no such person, was not learned and so well behaved, then everyone can speak Krishna Katha, children can speak Krishna Katha, everyone must speak Krishna Katha. And when we speak Krishna Katha, we have a responsibility to not compromise. And this is our weapon in our society. We have to come out and speak when we see nonsense things like this. And if we can't do anything, like those Brahmins in that assembly with Sishupal, then we should leave that sangha. I remember once I attended a Bhagavatam class in Mayapur, and there was a very exalted one of Srila Prabhupada's godbrothers was being criticized. Not by name, but everyone knew who it was. And I was horrified, and I felt so bad in my heart. And I was, oh, thank you, Kunt. That's wonderful. Hari Bhakti, you lost 10, 5, 3, 6, 7. Shastra Vyasya Shachabhave Purve Sham Lokodishrutam Satam Aduni Kanam Cha Katam Bandhu Sukirtaya. Only a person who's well versed in the Shastra should be allowed to speak. However, if there's no such speaker, and even if there are not many inquisitive listeners, one should never give up discussing topics about the Supreme Lord. In the association of friends, brothers, children, and other family members, one can always discuss narrations of the Supreme Lord as presented by Satan person. But our responsibility, our duty is that we can't compromise. And we have to speak out. And if we're a manager, then we have another kind of responsibility. If we're a chatriya, we have to say, this is very wrong.
I, from my perspective, within the society that I live in, I don't find it necessary to leave the society completely. I can still speak up, but I may leave, and I have left a number of times. Certain sanghas, I won't tolerate. I don't care who they bring to, I don't care if it's a Vidvik devotee, or a Gaudiya Mutt, or a Babaji, or whoever, a fallen Vaishnava, I don't want to hear criticism of anyone. We can't tolerate that. And we have to say something according to our position. But if the person who's saying it is a very senior Vaishnava, like I was in this class, and it was a very senior Vaishnava saying that, I was horrified. And I saw some other persons, very senior devotees were there, who I knew they had great appreciation for this Vaishnava who was being criticized. And I thought, they'll say something. And I thought, I'll stay here in this Sangha and I'll purify myself when I hear them correct this person and chastise him. And the person was very bad. It was such a bad assembly. He finished the kata and he knew, the speaker, he was a little smart, he knew these other persons were there like this. So he finished his class by just shouting, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, and saying, we don't care for any other Vaishnava, just Prabhupada. And the way he was shouting, all so many fanatical people, they also started shouting Prabhupada ki jai, and it was just like what we call in English a ruckus, a loud noise. And I left and I felt so bad. And the whole day I was very depressed. And finally I went to our Guru Maharaj. And I said, Guru Maharaj, I think I did some Vaishnava aparad. And he said, he became very serious. He said, what did you do? I said, well, I went to Bhagavatam class and this person was speaking like this. And he told me, he said, you should have got up and left. And I said, but what can I do now? He said, anyway, you're in the dump. And it wasn't intentional. You're doing service to your guru, you're chanting, that thing can go away. So, as you pointed out correctly, it's not just a cut and dry thing. Prabhupada gives the example, tells the story of the thief whose auntie raised him, and she never chastised him. And then finally he was robbing people and killing people, and then the state captured him, and they put him to court, and they sentenced him to death, and they were going to hang him. And they asked him just before they hang him, do you have a last wish? Yes, I want to speak to my dear auntie. So they called her, auntie, I want to whisper in your ear. And so she put her ear up right by his mouth. She was crying, my dear nephew. And he went, and he bit off her ear and started shouting. And he said, because of you, I'm here. Because you never chastised me. So we also have a responsibility like that. And we have to follow our heart. It's not such a cut and dry thing. But sometimes it may be very difficult. Sometimes we may not be able to say something. In that case, we have to leave. And if somehow you can't leave with your body, just like the Gadhara Pandit once, he knew that, better we don't mention the name, one Vaishnava, Mahaprabhu didn't appreciate it. And that Vaishnava was always trying to get everyone to listen to his commentary in the Bhagavatam. And everyone would avoid him. And one day that Vaishnava captured Gadadhar Pandit and got him in a corner and started telling him how Sridhar Swami is bogus and I don't appreciate him. And Gadadhar Pandit, he couldn't go anywhere. He couldn't run away. But in his heart, he left. And he wasn't hearing anything. So it's not such a cut and dry thing. And sometimes devotees even use this in a kind of sectarian way, in kind of a gross way. That all anybody who's left in this Sangha, because this Sangha criticized my Guru Maharaj, therefore the whole Sangha is bad, the whole institution is bad, and because you belong to that, you're bad. But that's very shallow, I would suggest. There are so many elevated persons, and so many Vaishnava Sanghas today. And those elevated persons may not be the managers. They may be the common housewife or child who's coming to the program, who's chanting Hare Krishna. We should see that's the real Sangha. And there's other things, they're like stool on the Ganga. And I don't want to associate with them. That's not Prabhupada's ISKCON. Prabhupada's ISKCON is like the Ganga. Prabhupada's ISKCON is Prabhupada's desire. And I want to associate with that thing very strongly. And those people, you're right, I want to avoid them. And if we see something, we have an obligation to say something. According to our position, according to our need. Is that okay?
Yep.
Thank you. Anything else is that? Did you want to say anything?
Yesterday we declined to do the lila that was written by Rupa Goswami. At the end, Radha and Krishna meet. How can Radharani, I don't understand Radharani committing suicide, and I don't even remember how it is that Radha and Krishna meet.
It takes a long time to digest Anantamata.
It's the first time I hear that.
Yes.
I heard what you said, but I don't understand.
Okay. you're a simple person. My grandmas used to say that someone who's simple, the Vaishnava is simple. You said the quality of the simple person is, if they're in a class and they don't understand something, they'll ask the question. But someone who's crooked, they don't say anything, even though they don't understand, because they don't look foolish or whatever. So, Radharani, Rupa Goswami says that Radharani, in separation from Krishna, she became unmadana, she became mad, and she experienced 10 different dasa-dasa, 10 different symptoms of sudura prabhas, the separation from existence, and the last one of which is mrityu, or death. She committed suicide. So, that's the most ghastly thing I could possibly imagine anyone ever speaking about, but Rupa Goswami's written that. But we don't take it in a way that we would take suicide in this material world. At the end of the Lalita Madhav, Yoga Maya Devi, she tells Radha and Krishna, actually none of this happened. Radharani never really committed suicide. How can Radharani commit suicide? She has no material body. There's no question of anything like that. But it's a pastime. And she said specifically, this was a dream. And the purpose of the dream was to evoke these very powerful emotions. We can't imagine, even as we commented last night, within mundane love literature like Romeo and Juliet, suicide of your beloved is a most very, very powerful theme. And Rupa Goswami, long before Shakespeare, he was writing about this in Lalita Madhava, in a divine kind of way, and how that affected Krishna. And how that apparent suicide affected all the Vrijbasis. Very, very powerful. But it actually didn't happen. It was just some pastime. It was a dream. Is that okay? It takes some time to think about it. But therefore, we were mentioning last night one thing which might help. Don't try to think about it in terms of geography. Don't try to think about it in terms of history. Try to understand that this reality is a reality of love and lila. And it's something beyond time, beyond geography, beyond anything like that. Mm-hmm. It's a question of love. Okay. Anything else to say?
It's about last night, the topic of last night that was about Radha Krishna's pastime. I felt disturbed. Because I don't understand. To me, like, as I said when we were in New Mayapur, I don't even have faith in the holy name. It's like, for me, it's hard to listen to Radha and Krishna's pastime and think that it's, to me, it's like listening to fables. And I don't understand what is the, because I know that in the past these were topics that Mahaprabhu, I think, discussed them with maybe two or three of his associates. Very exclusive. I also know that some more recent Vaishnavas have discussed them more openly, and I don't understand what is the appropriate How do you gauge when it's appropriate to share that and when it's not in the Sangha? I don't know most of the devotees here. I don't know how much these devotees understood of what was happening. I don't even know how much you understand of the, I find it confusing, and I don't know how to. I don't know. Did your spiritual master ask you to share that? I don't understand.
We printed that in his order. He spoke that a number of times. And Prabhupada said we should read these things. Prabhupada said even, he says in Krishna book, he said the devotees who
want to know more about Radha Krishna, they should read Krishna Bhavanamrita.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've read that, but that book is very, very transcendently erotic.
Mm-hmm.
It, much more so than the story that we told last night, which is really a story about separation.
Yeah.
In this regard, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he cautioned the devotees, and he forbade them from speaking about the intimate pastimes of God and Krishna. But he also told them that we may sometimes speak about that, we may speak about separation, which is the subject matter of the Lita Madhu. And there is a benefit, even if we don't understand the subject matter that's being presented before us, just like a child, if you give a child, there's a song, a spoonful of medicine, a spoonful of sugar makes the medicine go down. You tell the child, hey, I'm giving you some candy, and mixed with that sugar, there's some medicine. The child doesn't know the medicine's there. The child doesn't appreciate it. The child has no faith in the medicine. But still, the medicine acts. And the Bhagavatam states in this regard, Vikriditam vradivadu viridam ca vishno shranvito nushunayat atavanayat yaha bhaktim param varibit bhaktim param. Is it, you know, depiction? Bhaktim param. Bhaktim param bhagavati patilabhya kamam vidrogamasapahi notya chirena diraha. This verse describes that whoever hears and chants about the pastimes, loving pastimes of Krishna and the gopis, even they have lust, that lust will go away. If they're hearing, then someone who has proper faith. In this case, meaning we're repeating what we've heard from the acharyas and from Rupa Goswami and others. Still, we may question, well, maybe this is not the right topic for me. We may think like that. There's a story in this regard, a true story. And I think this was in the Gaudiya Vedanta Samiti, if I'm not incorrect, one branch of the Gaudiya Mission, Gaudiya Math. There was one devotee who had become very, very sick. And so much so, whatever he would take would just come out through him. He had loose motions and vomiting, even water. And they took him to the doctor, and the doctor said, my God, it's good you brought him here. He would be dead within a few more hours or something, because you can't keep anything in your body, even water. So the doctor told him, then, give him ghee. And the devotee said, what are you saying, give him ghee? That's crazy. You can't digest water, Baba. And you're going to give him ghee? How is he going to be able to digest? The doctor said, give him ghee. Okay, they gave him ghee, and what happened? He vomited it out, and it came out the other end. Huh? But the nature of ghee is that some of it stuck to him. And that ghee coated his stomach. And then he was able to digest something. So we told this story last night because we wanted to hear something about Rupa Goswami. And we wanted to speak something about it. And it was a story that our revered spiritual master has spoken. And he spoke it in connection with Rupa Goswami, that how do we understand that he followed Mahaprabhu's instruction or not. And we told it for that reason, to glorify Rupa Goswami, to get a taste of some of his literature and to consider it. Prabhupada said, we must read the works of the Goswamis. It's important. But there's a difference between reading them and meditating on them. There are a certain class of Vaishnavas who have a different bhajan pranali than our own, and they meditate on Astakaliya Leela, the different eightfold pastimes of the Lord in the day. My revered spiritual master told me, you can read some of these books. And I've heard also from other higher Vaishnavas, sometimes they would tell that to their disciples. That's really a matter between the guru and the disciple. Not everyone was like that. Srila Sridhar Maharaj was very cautious in this regard. But some other Vaishnavas would say, you may read, but they told him that you don't have a right to meditate on this. You can know what's in that book, but you don't have the adhikara to try to meditate on this way. So we had a specific purpose last night, which I hope we accomplished, I don't know. Our purpose is to try to glorify Rupa Goswami and to try to speak about that topic and then to conclude with it, to see what is the relevance of it to us? How do we understand it? And I wanted to try to speak about it in terms of Gauralila, in terms of Jagannath Puri, and how that Navabrindavan is a concept of the heart and not a geographical, historical concept to the concept of the heart, which we find in Gauralila, in Jagannath Puri, which Rupa Goswami and other Goswamis also indirectly given to us. So I would say like that, that we may not have faith in the holy name. We may not have so much faith in this process. But if we go on hearing and associating and hearing this katha, rasayana katha, it acts as a medicine. It's a rasayana. And it'll give us faith. Sooner or later, if we continue hearing from that, that's why we spoke it. I hope that it was appropriate for everyone. And I have no doubt that by hearing it, we become purified. By hearing it, by speaking about it, there's no doubt. It doesn't belong to us. This is the medicine that we're getting from our Goswamis and from our Gurujana.
Yes, but I would say something on that. According to the teachings of Guru Maharaj, my Guru Maharaj, if we understand the things from the angle of service, doing seva, which is the opposition, then everything is safe. Like we come to the class, we come to listen to the Vaishnava who's coming from far, then that is seva, and then whatever topic to choose, we listen, even though we may not understand. Like sometimes Guru can give instruction that is not understandable. It is revealed during the seva or after the seva, so there is no harm. And I agree totally with what I was saying, that it is purifying now, because the seva is purifying. So,
yeah. Beautiful point that your Guru Maharaj raised, and again, something I humbly feel was a very important contribution that he gave to our family, was to teach us to be cautious and to be careful with these things. And as you said, the important word is seva. We were recently, I won't say names, but we were recently in one temple for a Sunday program, and during the kirtan, there was one sadhu who had come from India, a very 85-year-old senior person, very advanced devotee. And anyway, I was feeling a little disturbed because a lot of the devotees couldn't understand him. They didn't appreciate him. And it seemed to me they were coming there just to get close to him and have their picture taken with him. And then in the kirtan, I saw one devotee dancing and jumping up and down right in front of that old man. He couldn't even see the deities. And I didn't. Maybe I'm just a fault finder. I am a fault finder. But I didn't feel, looking at that devotee, that there was really any ecstasy in his dancing. It felt to me more like he was, let's have a good time. Mm-hmm. We're here to have some fun. Mm-hmm. And many times devotees do like that. They go to Mayapur. Hey, you know where the good pizza's at? Yeah, over there. And I heard tonight they're going to have, you know, this one person's going to be singing, I really like their singing. That sounds great. We'll have a good time. Mm-hmm. That's not the purpose. And Srila Sridhar Maharaj gave us such a very deep instructions on this thing. We chant and do this thing as service, mm-hmm. for the pleasure of our Gurudev, for the pleasure of the Vaishnavas, for the pleasure of Krishna. Mm-hmm. Whether we understand it or don't understand it, we're trying to do it for Krishna's pleasure. Such a nice common thinking.
So my experience is that suddenly I can refresh again, because sometimes I've been hearing like that in the shaking. And this last period is like so much kata about criticizing, rain, criticizing, you know, that offenses, and I'm getting into it myself, speaking it, and this is the night I just realized this is such a waste of time talking about these things, and hearing about Krishna is so, this is the reality for my heart, that it gives me so much happiness after the experience of that time, and a chance again to hear more and chant, because this is a process, and stop as much as I can talking or hearing all the things around us. For me, it's just a waste of my consciousness, and I can be taking away the space for all the real things for myself. This is what I felt. But yes, thank you very much.
Very beautiful comment.
I tell you, I want a copy of that class to really send to it. It's more of a
we should hear something about Krishna. We take part in the Govardhan retreat every year in Braj. This year, I think it's in the month of December. And all the Vaishnavas come together, usually it's Satchinanda Maharaj and Burijan Prabhu and myself are the speakers. And then afterwards, the devotees of Vaishnavas speak something about the realizations and things. And Satchinanda Maharaj made a comment this last year. He said that some people think that speaking about Krishna, if you start speaking about Krishna, they'll look at you, is there something wrong with you? Are you sexually agitated? Why are you speaking about Krishna? You're not supposed to do that. But we are supposed to do that. And one of the proofs is Srila Prabhupada, our Prabhupada, did something very unusual. We don't understand it because we don't have such a background in Gaudiya Vaishnavism. We're new to this thing. But Srila Prabhupada took the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam and presented it in Krishna book and told the devotees to distribute it everywhere. They were going to rock and roll concerts where everybody's smoking marijuana and they're completely intoxicated and engaging in sex life and saying, here, take this, George Harrison signed it, man. You got to take this book. And giving everyone Krishna book and telling the devotees, it wasn't just an exercise to give them the book, but he wanted people to read it. And he wanted the devotees to read it. We should be absorbed in thinking about Krishna. It's important. But, as Srila Saraswati Thakur instructed us, we should be very careful. We should not speak about Milan of Radha and Krishna. But we may speak about Virpalamba, some separation. Another place he said we can also speak something about Mother Yashoda and Baby Krishna. Our Guru Maharaj would speak about those things generally. If he spoke about Radha Krishna, it was always in context with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and either directly or indirectly about separation and how the feelings of separation came up. That's a safe topic for us. We don't know, maybe we haven't read these literatures, but there are literatures which describe very intimate things in Mahaprabhu. Lalita Madhava is a drama that Mahaprabhu told Rupa Goswami to perform to make for everyone to watch. It was meant to be a public display. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in private, he was hearing Vidyapati, Chandidas, Bhagamangala Thakur, Jayadeva Goswami, in the Gambira. And it wouldn't hurt us to know something about what those literatures were. I've read a little something of those, not for my bhajan, but just to have some understanding for service, what's going on? What is there? Why is it? And it's very interesting. All those subjects are speaking about the emotions of Srimati Radharani and about how she's meeting with Krishna because Mahaprabhu wanted to hear that thing. But that was the thing which is not, people are not qualified to hear. That's a very, very intimate thing, the erotic pastime of Radha and Krishna. And those literatures are very transcendentally erotic. We have no jurisdiction for them. They're way, way beyond us. But we should understand what he was reading, why he was reading that. And in general, as you're pointing out correctly, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught us with Gadadhar Pandit at Sukha Gopinath Temple, or some Vaishnavas say that it's actually at Indraduma Sarovar, what's it called? Rajendra Sarovar? Would they have the Chandan Narendra Sarovar? Narendra Sarovar. That Gadadhar Pandit was speaking to Bhagavatam. What was he speaking? Not 10th canto. He was speaking Dhruva Charit and Prahlad Charit. And our Vaishnava Acharyas are described as an internal and external reason for that. The external reason was for Loka Siksha, to teach us that when we're in a public place with non-devotees, and there's a big difference between that and the Vaishnavas who are initiated and chanting and reading, but with non-devotees, we shouldn't speak about these things. We'll speak about Prahlad Maharaj and Dhruva Maharaj. And there's also an internal reason. As in the mood of Radha, Radharani gets pleasure hearing about Prahlad and Dhruva because they have family problems. And Radharani also has family problems. She has Kutila and Zatila, and they're causing her so many troubles. And Dhruva and Prahlad, they also have their family problems, and somehow they manage to overcome them and get the lotus feet of Krishna. So Mahaprabhu, he's relishing internally in the mood of Radha, hearing that thing. So if we don't know anything about Zatila and Kutila even, we can't understand how Mahaprabhu is relishing that thing. We should understand something, in theory, at least about these things. We should read Krishna books. Important.
Prabhupada gave not only Krishna book, but he gave Upadeshamrita, which is a very, very high book. We should read that. We should go very deep in it. But we should do it as a service. That's so important. Otherwise, we'll become like sahajas, just wanting to enjoy something. This is a very nice topic. Sandra, thank you very much. Okay, anything else, sister? Lalita?
Actually, very happy. Sadhaka just raised 2 points for me were crucial. I'm really happy I got to hear those.
This is a Vaishnava Sangha. Vaishnava Sangha is a Sangha where everyone feels peaceful to voice their mind and even some doubts. I remember one Sangha that I was in once. I asked a question. The Maharaj is giving a class, nice class, and I said, so in the purport, Prabhupada is saying that you should accept a guru who is an Uttama Adhikari. And I said, I accept there's gurus on different levels, and I don't mind. I'm not insisting, you know, but if you want to find an Uttama guru, how do you do that? And that person's response shattered my heart, and I'll never forget that. He started shouting at me. That, you know, who are you? What have you done for Prabhupada? Who do you think you are? And I couldn't. And I was trying to say. He said, anyone who chants 16 rounds and follows four good principles, they're an Uttama Adhikari. And I was horrified because the guru that I'd taken previously had fallen down and gone away, and it really hurt me for him to say that. And I said, well, how can you say that? That means that practically everybody's. And he just then he wouldn't let me speak. He was just shouting so loud at me in the microphone. And it hurt my heart. Mm. And that's not a Vaishnava Sangha. That's rape. Yeah. That's a kind of spiritual rape. If someone's coming to you with some sincerity, and you don't acknowledge and respect that sincerity, instead you just trample on it, that's a terrible kind of violence. And it's really, really important. We should have Vaishnava Sangha. And even if someone has an unpalatable question, that we should be simple and honest and express it and be willing to address it. And not in a negative, nasty way, which you didn't. Not in a challenging kind of way. Mm-hmm. Some people, they play games to stump the Swami. Maharaj, you said this thing, this, and maybe try to defeat them or something. That's also wrong. Mm-hmm. It's not the right way to behave.
It took me 24 hours to
digest it,
to word it in a palatable and a somewhat palatable way.
Thank you.
Speak
loudly, it's hard for me to hear you.
Okay. What you raised, it raises some doubts in my heart and mind about, you said something about how it is piercing that Radha and Krishna's pastimes are so stable, then are we qualified to hear them? And I actually don't know the source, it's one of those I heard on class, which can mean, you know, maybe bona fide, maybe completely bogus. But I heard once that if you are disturbed by hearing these things and you sleep and you don't, then you probably shouldn't be hearing them.
No, that's what I thought last night. Last night I thought I should get up and get out of here because this is just disturbing me. Mm.
So I was wondering whether in that case, what do you do? Do you just read Bhagavad Gita? Do you, you know, just philosophy, whatever? But you are supposed to be in Swastanga, here indirectly by Krishna. So what is the reconciliation of that?
We have to be careful. And as you said, there's a doctor in our heart. And that doctor knows what medicine we should take. And if we have some doubts about that, I'm happy you didn't leave. But I think that the doctor in your heart is telling you, I wouldn't suggest you read Lalita Madhava or some of those books. Maybe when that doctor in your heart whispers something in your ear, you do that, or your Guru Maharaj tells you to do that thing. We spoke it for a different purpose. I hope we were successful or something. We wanted to speak about Vipralam. We wanted to speak about Jagannath Puri and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the glories of Rupa Goswami. I heard it from my Guru Maharaj. I can say that, and he spoke it a number of times and he printed that thing. So on that strength, I felt some license to do it as a service. I'm not a higher Vaishnava though who can tell you whether that's something you should hear or not hear. But I agree completely with Krishna Kun. Jiva Goswami, he says a similar thing in Bhakti Sandarbha, that if someone becomes agitated sexually when they're reading some pastimes of Radha and Krishna, they should avoid those particular parts and jump over that and go on to something else. Because we may have some misunderstanding.
It wasn't sexual agitation.
It wasn't a very sexual talk.
Yeah. What I found, I really have to meditate on it to see why, what is it that's disturbing me. And what came up for me is that I grew up in Islam, and my experience has been that Islam is, there is, at least growing up, I was surrounded by many new devotees at least that were very, I guess, canista, very superficial. And there is an attraction to, that what I felt last night was I haven't even began to understand the Bhagavad Gita. What am I doing here? That's what I felt. And that's what was disturbing me.
But let me interject for a comment. I can't claim to understand Srila Prabhupada, or A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, but one thing that we can see that he did, which is a very astonishing thing, he gave us Krishna book, which included the Rasa Lila and pastimes, which are actually much more elevated than what we were speaking about last night. And he told that new devotees should be reading this.
Mm-hmm.
But does that happen? I would venture to say that at least today, a lot, in many sanghas, it doesn't happen. And they're not reading that because they're afraid of it. And that they don't do it, but they're disobeying instruction from Prabhupada. Then. He's given that Krishna book, and with that Krishna book, he's given his commentary to protect us. And he's told us to read it as a service for him. But I've found in many places there's an atmosphere of fear, and devotees are afraid to look at those books. And then sometimes because of that, I think our society is not able to nourish people the way that we should. And sometimes even people, then they leave and they go to some other sanghas. They may go outside of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's family. They may go to Babaji's or something. But we have these things in our sangha in a certain context. And the most important thing, we should do service and we should read. Shushu Sho Shuddhana Shah Vasudeva Kutavichi Shama Sevaya Vipra Punya Tirthana Sevaya. By doing service to Guru and Krishna, I'm trying to do some service. My Guru Maharaj told me to speak certain things. And also he never told me not to speak this thing. Rather, he told me I should speak the things that I've heard from him. And in a sangha, I'm trying to serve the Vaishnavas. I'm trying to serve him by speaking that thing. But some persons will be afraid of that. And some persons may not appreciate me or may not appreciate the kata I was speaking. I shouldn't be offended by that. That's fine. Why should they? Why should they want to hear from me? That's their choice. They may want to hear from someone else. They may be more comfortable hearing from someone else. But I think sometimes this is due to because of an atmosphere of fear. And because sometimes some of the leaders, with all respect, they haven't read very deeply. They haven't heard very deeply. And I, with all respect, I don't even know how deeply they've done service. They may have worked very hard and done some big, big projects, but I don't know how deeply with their heart they were offering that to their Guru Maharaj. And the result is, we see, they may have a big position, but they're afraid of Krishna Katha. And they're afraid of people who can speak some Krishna Katha. They're afraid, especially sadhus from India who know Sanskrit or something, because they're going to show us up. It's an atmosphere of fear. And that's not right. At the same time, if someone's really afraid like that, it's a fact, what she's saying. Better that they don't hear that thing. Better they don't read that.
What I have experienced is I'm also very critical. But anyway, what I have experienced, what I have noticed, is a trend in Islam amongst neophyte devotees who, in my opinion, don't even get the basics. There is this trend to chase for the new how do you say? Yeah, but it's like it's cool if I it's how do you say? I become significant because I know of a lila that you haven't heard of. This kind of mentality. And then I see that people approach Madhurya Rasa Lila of Radha and Krishna with that mentality. And it's just like, to me, it just feels like it's completely inappropriate.
I think that the point, as he was saying, is I feel in this sometimes, I agree with you. We see this a lot. And it disturbs me when I see devotees approaching it in a mood of enjoyment.
Yeah.
Wow, this is really cool. This is fun, man. I read this thing here. You can't read Bhagavad Gita like that.
Mm-hmm.
You can't read On the Way to Krishna, Path to Perfection, or any book and get very much out of it if you're going to read with the attitude of enjoyment. We should read with service attitude.
Mm-hmm.
And we should speak about Krishna. We should speak about Krishna. Like that was Srila Prabhupada's instruction. But you're correct. There's a growing mood today. And I personally feel it's partly because there's been a crisis of faith in the Vaishnava community, partly due to two things. One of which was that some people wanted to take the role of leaders and gurus and they weren't qualified. And the second problem was that there were some followers who also didn't think the guru was such a big thing, I can take anybody. And they had some sentimental idea about guru, and they accepted those people. A marriage has both a husband and a wife. It's not just the wife's fault or the husband's fault, it's two persons together. So in that kind of sangha, they came together, and we don't have a lot of people who are qualified. We're not approaching guru in the right way. We should speak about this thing. And part of the result that happened then, some of those persons fell down, they went away, and then those disciples, they lost faith in everyone. And then they just said, well, I only have faith in Prabhupada. I only have faith in the books. And I don't want to hear from anyone. Prabhupada said in one lecture, quote, he said that some people say, what is the use of reading the books? And he says, of course, he said, what is the use of accepting a guru? I'll just read the books. And Prabhupada said, of course, they have a very bad experience. And he says, they may read Bhagavad Gita 100 times, they may read it 1,000 times, but they won't understand a single word.
Mm-hmm.
Because they haven't approached the sadhu. And they're not doing it as service. So, Srila Prabhupada, he instructed my spiritual master when he was in Bhuvaneshwar. Prabhupada told him, he gave him a very unusual instruction. He told him, I want you to preach to the devotees.
Mm-hmm.
As far as I know, I'm not trying to make him exclusive or something, but I don't really know of anyone else that probably gave that instruction to. Maybe he did. I wouldn't be surprised. But I'm not aware of that. Generally, Prabhupada wanted him to preach to the non-devotees. But he told him to preach to the devotees, perhaps because he saw that Gaura Govinda Maharaj grew up in a Gaudiya Vaishnava family, and he knew Siddhanta. He was very well aware of the Goswami books before he joined ISKCON. He read Chaitanya Charitamrita and was very familiar with it. And grew up with the Bhagavatam and chanting Hare Krishna. So Prabhupada gave him a particular instruction like that. And our Guru Maharaj, he told us that it pained him when he saw that devotees were thinking that not everything is there in Prabhupada's books, or not everything is there in Prabhupada's society, and he wanted to show them that everything, that was his mission for his Guru Maharaj. He wanted to show that everything was there. And sometimes devotees misunderstood him for that. And they misunderstood him in two different ways, at least. One way I think they misunderstood him is they thought that he was a sahaja himself or something and speaking things that devotees weren't qualified for. But most of those devotees became quiet, I think, when he left his body the way that he did in Mayapur. But a second group of devotees misunderstood him, who thought that now we're also going to do exactly like that and imitate him. And I'm also like that. That's also wrong. We should speak something, but we should speak what we've digested, what we've tried to understand. And we should speak, we should see how it has some relevance.
Mm-hmm.
For me personally, I have no interest in speaking anything, even if it's about Putana. We were mentioning this the other day. Unless I can see the relevance of it for us.
Mm-hmm.
And how is it not, is that just a fairy tale that we're telling for some entertainment? I don't want to be just a storyteller to entertain people. But we have to show how this is relevant for me and what it means for my bhakti, for my situation. That's very important.
one small question is, Sri Prabhupada in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita says we shouldn't jump over, we should read in a gradual way. So does that mean we should read all the first 9 cantos before reading the Krishna book?
Well, what about the people who got Krishna book at a rock concert? Oh, don't read that book. I'll sell it to you. Give me some, but you can't read it. I probably didn't have that idea. There's a growing movement in some Vaishnava sanghas which disturbs me. And they tell devotees, they try to control them. They say, okay, we're training you. And they tell them, you're not allowed, never mind the Krishna book, you're not allowed to read Bhagavad Gita until you've read On the Way to Krishna, Path of Perfection, the small books that Srila Prabhupada gave. And then after that, then you can read Isopanishad. And after that, you can read Bhagavad Gita. And Krishna book comes way down the line. I find that very, very objectionable. If you would have tried to do that to me, I wouldn't be here today. Because they gave me Bhagavad Gita. I couldn't understand it, couldn't appreciate it. They gave me Science of Self-Realization. I saw that book before I joined. This when it came out. I first saw the book. Had no interest in it. But the first book that really clicked with me, that I just said, wow, was Teachings of Lord Chaitanya, which is probably the highest philosophical book Prabhupada wrote. And that book blew my mind. Couldn't understand anything. But it just somehow just really touched my heart and attracted me. And I came. And then I moved into the temple. I started, they called me one day, hey, new bhakta, come clean this godown. And so we were cleaning the godown, and I found a book, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, Volume 1, which is, again, the most philosophical thing. And I said, hey, can I have this? I said, yeah, go ahead. So I took that, and I loved it. And somehow I was very attracted by it. I couldn't understand it. I'm still trying to understand that book. Now, 30 years later, something I think maybe we can understand by our Guru Maharaj's mercy, because of service we're doing for him, and because of our bhajan and trying, we can understand something of that book. But it wasn't that it was wrong for me to read it. We should read it. But how much we'll be able to, the ghee will stick, but how much we'll be able to digest, that depends on the person. Okay? Alright. Shall we stop that? Vamcha kavadu vishcha kripa sindhu vyeva cha pitanam pavane vyo vaishnavi vyo